Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
Both of these campaigns decided they were going to go the policy polite route. And it just so happened that both of them chose that in the rock, paper, scissors, and we got what we got, which was a pretty civil policy debate.
I think 22 years is pretty good. It's a retirement age. Not that I'm abandoning what I do now, but that it's time for someone else, and it's time for somebody younger.
It's becoming damned if you do, damned if you don't, simply because people want to jump on conspiracy bandwagons, and they want all the answers before the analysis has been done.
We don't know anything about these people, right? We have only the vaguest information on them. We're heading into a high-stakes election, and we'd kind of like to know, who they are.
Harris is getting somewhere between 10 and 12% of Republican crossover vote, and that's really hurting Trump's ability to gain a lead in the state.
I just think it's important that, election officials across the country who are tempted to do exactly what Peggy Judd and Tom Crosby were doing in Cochise County know that we are watching. That is the most important message.
And joining me to talk about the upcoming retirement of a longtime Arizona congressman, the Arizona connections to Jack Smith's new court filing in the case against former President Trump, and more, our former state school superintendent Jaime Molera with the firm Molera Alvarez. Good morning, Jaime.
Good morning.
And former congressional staffer Roy Herrera. Roy, good morning to you.
Good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to both of you. So, Roy, let me start with you on this new, around 120,000 more voters now found to not have provided proof of citizenship when registering to vote due to a computer glitch with the Motor Vehicle Division. The first, we thought that there was the first round, about 98,000, but now there's a lot more. What are the implications of this, do you think, both practically and sort of, I don't want to say philosophically, but sort of in the perception of people?
Well, so it would have been better, obviously, if the entire population had been announced at once, right? That would have been cleaner. But from my understanding is that this new population is exactly situated as the prior population, the prior approximately 90,000 people. So these are individuals who have not shown proof of citizenship due to that MVD glitch, but are, full ballot voters, meaning they can vote for, federal, state, and local candidates. Mm-hmm. And of course, when this the issue was discovered originally, I think the governor, the secretary of state, and the attorney general did the right thing in that they went to court. They went to the state Supreme Court to get some judicial and some legal certainty about this. And then the court found that these folks should remain on the ballot as full ballot voters. So this new tranche of people, while it's unfortunate it came out later, are the same type of people, and they are going to be allowed to have the same voting rights, the same ability to vote full ballot. Now, obviously, there'll be some conspiracy theorists that will probably, use this to their own ends. But I think what is important to sort of point out is in that litigation, the litigation before the state Supreme Court, you had Republicans and Republican-leaning groups argue to the court that these folks, these individuals who have not provided proof of citizenship at all, should remain as full ballot voters. So I'll repeat, Republicans and Republican-leaning groups argued that these folks who have not provided proof of citizenship should be remaining on the ballot or remaining on the voter rolls, excuse me. So it'll be interesting. Now, one might say there's a little bit of hypocrisy there because it's probably because of the fact that, this population leans Republican. But that is the position that the Republicans took, and that's something that should be remembered.
Jaime, do you anticipate that the state GOP will take the same or have the same kind of feeling about this group? I mean, they've called for Secretary Fontes to resign over this.
So I'm a little bit surprised that Roy is shocked that there's politics going on in an election in a presidential election year. No, I think they're going to, of course, they're going to continue to do that. And of course, they're going to continue to make this a political issue. But one of the things, as Roy pointed out, there were more Republicans in this list than there were Democrats. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, they want to allow them to vote. But they're also going to use the political leverage of saying, see, they're allowing possibly all these people that are non-citizens the ability to vote. The only trouble I have with how this rolled out is I think that the governor and the secretary of state in particular should have been more aggressive in making this public and putting this out there. Because, getting, for instance, the Speaker of the House and President of the Senate and including them in these discussions about what is happening and how we're trying to fix this thing But there wasn't a lot of that kind of communications. It's been very insular, and it's been, of course, through the court process. But I think the problem with this is that it surprised a lot of people. A lot of folks were like, well, wait a minute, what's going on here? And so that's why that kind of outreach to the public is so critical, but we just didn't see that.
Do you think that this will, as Roy alluded to, lead to more conspiracy theories and maybe diminish people's faith in what the results of the election actually are?
Well, of course, in certain sectors, absolutely it will. Let's just be honest about that. But if there is a game plan on how to roll this out, how to fix this going forward, then I think that starts to minimize it. And I think the conspiracy theories will always be in those little corners of the state where they're regardless of what happens and what people say or what the data says, they're always going to be talking about conspiracies. But if it's managed in a way that's public, that has the confidence of, you know, business organizations, political organizations saying, yeah, this makes a lot of sense, then I think you can mitigate that quite a bit. And the other thing is that the star cards now that people need to have, that's
the travel ID.
Exactly. Yeah. As that starts to, is being mandated now that you have to have it by next year, I think that starts to mitigate it too, because a lot of folks, you're going to need to show your passport or something that says you're a citizen in order to get that. So all of those things combined, I think will start to lessen this issue.
Roy, I'm curious what you make of the lawsuit filed by Strong Communities Foundation of Arizona, a Republican-aligned group, trying to get the names of these 200-some-odd-thousand voters. The Secretary of State's office is saying, we can't give it to you. We don't have it quite yet, and we won't have it before the election. The Secretary of State's office also say they're concerned that this will lead to harassment and intimidation of voters.
Well, it's that latter point, I think, that's pretty concerning to me that the Secretary is pointing out is, you know, what is the purpose for this list? Why do you want it? And we obviously have concerns giving out this list to third parties who may try to contact these voters and in some instances may, you know, try to harass these voters. And so I think that's a rightful concern that the Secretary of State has. Now, about whether, you know, they have the list already or need, you know, time to produce it or whatever, I don't know the actual answer to that. But I think that it should be a question here in this litigation is why exactly does this group, who is this group, and why exactly does this group want that list?
Jaime, I want to ask you about the court filing unsealed this week from Special Counsel Jack Smith in the 2020 election case against former President Trump. You talked about Roy being shocked before. We should all be shocked, right, that there's an Arizona connection to this, right? There's never an Arizona connection to any of these national election-related stories.
No, of course not. Well, it's pretty damning, let's be honest. And I think President Trump now realizes that he probably has to win in order to avoid a lot of the consequences that might fall out from this special counsel's report. So it's interesting that in Arizona, you know, we were at the heart of that, right? We were in the eye of the storm. Governor Ducey was getting calls by President Trump.
Very publicly, yeah.
That's right. His ringtone had Hail to the Chief, yeah. And it was playing while he was giving a press conference. So, yes, I think it will have implications, but I think people's as far as how it's going to impact the election, I'm not sure. I'm not so sure it is, because the folks that really believe that President Trump's a criminal, they believe that already. Those that believe that it's fake news and this is yet another liberal attempt to get at President Trump, they're going to believe that already. It's going to be interesting to see that very small percentage of Americans or Arizonans, how they're going to tip, and if this is going to make an impact on them.
Well, Roy, it's interesting, and there's been, you know, this is not something that I'm coming up with. A lot of folks have said that one of the interesting differences between Kamala Harris's campaign and President Biden's is that Harris is spending less time sort of talking about former President Trump as an existential threat to democracy, spending a little less time talking about things like January 6th and attempts to overturn the election. To Jaime's point, there's sort of that middle group of people who are undecided, persuadable, whatever word you want to use. Is something like this, especially in a place like Arizona, is something like this usable by the Democrats, by the Harris campaign, to try to convince voters who are maybe on the fence that they shouldn't vote for Trump and should vote for her?
Well, starting with the Jack Smith filing, you know, the ties to Arizona and what was specifically stated in there, and this is something that also is not particularly shocking, is that in the instances that Arizona's referenced with Ducey and others, you know, it had to do with sort of allegations that Trump was making and then a response for a request for evidence right? Like, well, what's the evidence for this particular fraud that you're saying? And the passage about Doug Ducey was interesting to me because he asked for the evidence and they never got back to him, right? Mm-hmm. And so what's not shocking to me is that the Trump campaign in 2020 couldn't find any evidence of any kind of fraud in Arizona or anywhere else. And so going into this election cycle, this presidential election, I am reminded of the moment in the vice presidential debate between Waltz and Vance when Waltz asked him whether Trump had won or not in 2020, and Vance couldn't answer the question. And of course, that was immediately cut into an ad by the Harris campaign, a very effective ad, I think. So I still think that it is an issue to many voters in Arizona and elsewhere, because you have a candidate on the other side in Trump that still refuses to acknowledge that he lost in 2020. And continues to, you know, put out these conspiracy theories, these allegations without evidence related to election fraud.
Is there any chance you think we're going to see Doug Ducey testifying? If assuming this goes to court, do either of you think there's a chance that someone like Doug Ducey would testify?
I think he'll try and avoid it like the plague if he ever wants to get back into politics. And I'm sure that at some point he probably will. So I think he'd want to stay away from this as much as possible.
Roy, what do you think?
I think he would totally want to stay away from it as much as possible, whether it happens or not. I mean, this is going to be so complicated by the immunity decision with the U.S. Supreme Court and sort of how things proceed. But I'm sure he will try to avoid it as much as possible.
He'll have a previous engagement that day or something like that. Roy, I want to start with you. Raul Grijalva, a Southern Arizona congressman, longtime Arizona congressman, says, assuming he wins this time, this term will be his last. Is it surprising to you at all that he would decide to call it quits after this next term? Again, assuming he wins. I mean, he's had some health issues recently. He's not, you know, he's not old, but he's not a young guy either.
It's a little bit surprising. I mean, this is someone I've known for decades now as a friend of mine, someone that I've admired for a long time. And with him, you always kind of felt like, well, this guy is just going to keep going, you know, for forever. So I was a little bit surprised. But of course, the health issues, the age, you know, at some point, sometime, you know, people want to get on with their lives and that kind of thing. So I'm not surprised in that sense. But, you know, he's going to have big shoes to fill. I'm sure there's going to be multiple people down there that are very interested since that seat hasn't been opened for a very, very long time. But the thing is if Democrats take the majority in the House, which it seems like they will nationally, he's going to go back to his chairmanship of natural resources for his last 2 years. And I'm sure he's going to, you know, do the best he can as kind of his swan song before he leaves.
Where would you place the over-under on the number of Democratic candidates getting into that primary, an open congressional seat in a safe Democratic district?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to probably a half dozen to begin with, at least, right? Okay. I mean, you know, obviously his daughter, Adelita Grijalva, is a Pima County supervisor down there.
Right.
You're going to have Regina Romero, the mayor. You know, there's probably some legislators that are going to be interested. So I think you're going to be in that sort of half dozen or so candidates to just begin with.
Jaime, would this be, obviously, as I mentioned, it's a pretty safe Democratic district. And with a longtime incumbent, it makes it even more difficult. But with him leaving, does that open the door a little bit for Republicans if they field the right candidate to maybe have a chance there?
So he represents where I grew up in Nogales. And I just want to say I am not running for that seat.
Come on.
Not the news we were expecting you to make today.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
There's still time, though. You still got 2 years.
I don't think a Republican has any chance whatsoever in that district. I mean, it's just so heavily skewed Democrat. But Roy's right. I think the over-under, in my opinion, is probably going to be 10.
Wow.
Because those are the kinds of seats that come along once in a lifetime. If you're able to win and catch lightning in the bottle, then you're there for at least the 22 years that Grijalva has been there. So even with redistricting, you're still going to have a very strong district in that area. So that's why I think it's going to be Democrat and it's going to stay Democrat for a long, long time.
All right. So, guys, I usually say this when I'm about to talk about a poll, which is that, you know, we recognize polls are snapshots in time. There have been a lot of polls recently about all sorts of races. But I want to ask you both about one specifically from High Ground, an Arizona-based firm. We have their pollster, Paul Bentz, on the newscap frequently. This showed that Vice President Kamala Harris is leading former President Trump in Harris, Vice President Trump in Arizona, 47.6% to 45.5%, so about a one-point difference. What I want to ask you, though, about is that it also showed that Harris is winning about 12% of Republican voters, whereas Trump is getting about 1.7% of Democratic voters. I mean, is that a significant thing that double-digit numbers of Republican voters say they're going to vote for the Democratic candidate?
Well, I'd want to look at the crosstabs, but I would assume that a lot of those Republican voters are Republican women. Republican women that are aligned with pro-choice policies. So that's been one of the schisms. And I've said this on this program a couple of times before. The Republicans need to focus on the two issues that benefit them. And I think Vice President Vance, prospective Vice President Vance, did a good job of talking about the border and talking about the economy. When you talk about these other issues, it takes away from that. And if you noticed, all the Democrats are talking about is the pro-choice issue, because that is that schism within the Republican Party, and again, with Republican women by and large. So the more that if they can stay on message, Republicans, then that helps them quite a bit. But if they allow the discussion to move to other areas and they're not talking about those things that sell, then they're going to have a tough time I up and down the line.
Yeah, Roy, how significant do you think it is? I mean, we saw, for example, the Harris campaign. I think Vice President Harris herself was campaigning with Liz Cheney in Wisconsin. We saw former U.S. Senator Jeff Flake, a Republican from Arizona, endorse Kamala Harris late last week. Are these, like, is this an area where the Harris campaign can maybe have some benefit at an election that a lot of people think is going to be sort of won on the margins?
Absolutely. I mean, in prior statewide campaigns I've been involved in, you know, data people have told me to win statewide as a Democrat in Arizona, you need to get at least 10% of the Republican vote, right? And then also win independents. And I don't know if that's true. I'm not a data person, but that's sort of back of the envelope what's always been expressed to me, that you need to get to at least 10%. And if you see, you know, folks that have been Democrats that have been wildly successful at the statewide level, like Senator Kelly, for example, he's done well north of that and done pretty well. So if Harris in that poll is up by, you know, 12 or 13 points, she's exactly where she needs to be as far as winning what will be a narrow race either way, right? Statewide. And I think to your point, I mean, she's been able to tout the support of a lot of people that I think do matter to at least a segment of the Republican electorate. You mentioned Jeff Flake. You know, obviously the outreach to the LDS community has been significant. Mayor Giles has also been an endorser there. And then, of course, there's Liz Cheney. But then also you've got members of the McCain family. And in Arizona in particular, I think that, you know, has a lot of weight, has a lot of power, and will help her. Now, on the issues, I completely agree with Jaime that, you know, probably the best issue for the Democrats among Republican suburban women in particular, which could be part of that 10%, is the issue of choice and reproductive rights. And, of course, there's going to be a ballot measure, you know, that's going to enshrine that in the Constitution. So these are things that I think the Democrats can take advantage of and run on going forward to get the necessary Republican support.
Jaime, do you think someone like Jeff Flake matters in this election? I mean, there's been so much talk about, you know, the idea of like giving Republicans almost permission to vote for a Democrat. And we saw that some 2 years ago in the governor's race and other statewide election races. Is that a legitimate thing, do you think?
I agree at the margins. I mean, Jeff Flake has also, remember, been a part of the Biden administration.
Right, Ambassador to Turkey. Yeah.
And so that tends to, I think, minimize a little bit his impact on Republicans. But certainly, it's a problem for the Republican candidates that these folks, and Mayor Giles is a good example of that, jumping ship and giving credence to allowing to vote for Harris. But again, it goes back to my point. If the Trump campaign stays on message, and that's been the problem of President Trump, of being able to stay on message, and Republicans nationally are bemoaning that. They're saying they loved what Vance did it because they believe he's a great messenger. Allowing him to be more front and center is going to be better for Arizona Republicans. And that's why you're going to see him coming to the state, I think, a lot more, is for that reason. I think he carries the message of the border security and the economy in a much more impactful way.
So we saw that this poll obviously had Vice President Harris up by a point or so. Been a lot of polls that show either Vice President Harris up by a few, former President Trump up by a few. I think the biggest one I saw was maybe 5 points. One of them was up. Do both of you still imagine this is going to be a really tight election, maybe even tighter than 4 years ago when President Biden won by, what, like 10,000 votes? Jaime, do you think that?
I think it's going to be extremely tight because there's still a lot of angst in Arizona over inflation and the economy. And every poll that I've seen, those still dominate the discussion. Reproductive rights is going to be a big issue, but I think that can be somewhat jujitsued by the Republicans because they're saying, well, look, there's an initiative that's going to be dealing with that. So you can vote on that, but then come back home and vote for the Republican policies that will deal with the economy, that will deal with border security.
So maybe conceding the proposition.
Well, certainly a lot of the Center for Arizona Policy is not going to concede anything on that. But Republicans really haven't been talking about it. They haven't been saying, I'm going to be against this initiative. If you noticed a lot of the rhetoric that's out there and the campaigns that are out there, they're not talking about it. So the smart ones are going to be really focused on those two issues that I've mentioned.
Roy, about 45 seconds. You anticipate this is going to be a super close race for president here again?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know if it can get closer than 10,000 votes, but it's going to be close. And, you know, on things like democracy, reproductive rights, obviously there's headwinds for the Democrats. And then I think also, you know, the Democrats are doing what they need to do and taking on the other issues like the economy and pointing out, you know, that there are good aspects of many good aspects of this economy, particularly in Arizona. And then, of course, we recently saw Vice President Harris go to the border and talk about the fact that she supported this bipartisan border security bill that Trump torpedoed for his own political ends. So that's the kind of thing that we're all going to be talking about for the next 30-some days, but it's going to be extremely, extremely tight.
All right. Roy Herrera, Jaime Molero, thanks you both for coming in. I appreciate the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.